Here's the thing, guys. Please welcome to the stage our next guest speaker. I'll tell you about some of her accomplishments, and I'm really excited for our next session. So, number one, Emma Sinclair. I saw her speak. I'll start by saying I saw her speak, I don't know, probably about 6 months ago. And whenever I spend time with her, she's like one of those individuals that has this way of looking for a way to help you succeed. It just comes so naturally to her, and it's kind of filters through into her recruitment strategy, which she's going to teach us in a moment, etc. And you're always so humbled when she either remembers your background or, you know, or what you've been doing, or it takes time to introduce you to someone who she thinks that can help you. She's that type of person. You know, we spoke about earlier that it matters to GAS, to give a... And the first time I heard her speak, you know, we connected on LinkedIn, and she sent me a message to say, hey, I remember your question. It was a great question. Thank you so much. And I was like, you know that feeling when you're like, wow, you know, that person remembered me. You know that, yes? That's why names are important. What's important? Those little things matter. You know, she's so good at that, right? But besides that, you know, when it comes to entrepreneurship and what she achieves is incredible. Emma's the youngest person to ever have floated a company in the London Stock Exchange at just 29. Youngest person ever. Okay. In 2016, she was awarded an MBE in the Queen's 90th birthday honors for service to entrepreneurship. She's the first UNICEF UK advisor on business and innovation, aimed at teaching disadvantaged youth in developing countries business and life skills. She's a regular commentator on business in the news for a variety of publications, ITV, Sky, Telegraph, Wall Street, and she's a massive advocate and vocal advocate for female entrepreneurship. She's just incredible. Please please join me on your feet and welcome to the stage, Emma Sinclair! Have a seat.
That's the kind of introduction my grandma would give about me. It was a bit generous, but I'll take it.
Awesome. First of all, how are you?
A very pertinent question, actually. Normally I'd say I'm fine and it's great to be here. I am fine, but it's slightly ironic to be here. You and I had a call about a week and a half ago, and I said to you, I've never had a back problem in my whole life. And at that point, when I spoke to you, I couldn't stand up straight and I couldn't walk in a straight line. The irony of having landed back from the US to know I need to find a chiropractor in the United Kingdom today is I respectful beliefs. I don't believe necessarily in religion or God, but I'm like, something's happening that one time is that day where I landed 12 hours ago. So just flagging, one person in the room that's near Baker Street or near the West End, I'll swap you excellent business advice for sorting my back out. So that was a longer answer to how are you, but there is an irony in being here. I'm good and I need a chiropractor. Do you know anyone that can help, Ryan?
Do we have a chiropractor in the room? That's awesome. Now, we'll make sure you get looked after. We'll make sure she gets looked after, yes? Okay, awesome, definitely. But it's amazing to have you. Thank you so much for...
Thank you.
I'm always very humbled when someone gives us the opportunity or the chance to come and share with my group. Let me grab that for you, Emma.
I'll do it. Okay, you do your thing.
I'll fight
with the bottle.
So, actually, first of all, would you guys like to hear from Emma a little bit about her journey in entrepreneurship and how she came about listing a company in the stock exchange? And would that be a nice place to start?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. Go for it.
Well, they have no choice. I mean, we've got the microphone. So, I mean, we can do whatever we want. No, not really. I think sometimes when I hear that introduction, which is very generous, it suggests, I don't know, if I didn't know me, that maybe I did an economics degree or I don't know, I was child prodigy in maths or something. By the way, none of these things. You know, how did I start my first business and how did I ultimately start a business that I floated that I think I'm still waiting for a 12-year-old in China to IPO a billion-dollar business. Has not happened yet, but how did that happen? I mean, my family were refugees from Eastern Europe. And my dad, I didn't grow up with money, but my dad used to put £100 every now and then into one of the privatizations of the utilities in the 80s. And he drove me to school every morning. So how did I get started in business life or know how to do anything or not know how? Just so we're clear, everything I've done, I didn't know how to. And afterwards, I understood better. My dad drove me to school. And every morning from the age of 4 to 18, we played Guess the Share Price. So... This is true. But of course, I mean, just so we're clear, we also did like, what was the capital city and how many red cars can you see? It wasn't like my dad was like, right, share price. But then I got to university and it was the first year in the UK that colleges had student loans. So I took out my student loan and I thought, well, I'll trade that on the stock market. I hit 18 when I got to college, and I had my grandparents had given me like £10 for my birthday and that kind of thing. Turned out I had £3,000 in a Barclays account you could access when your parents had their name on it when you were 18. So, I mean, how did I get started? I got started by taking money from the government and my bank account I shouldn't have done from my family to trade on the stock exchange. That is basically the story. So before anyone has any kind of like... I hear that introduction. It's mortifying. Just so you know, it's from playing Guess the Share Price with my dad.
It's interesting. One of my best friends, it's from school, grew up within his house since he was 10, and they would sit around Robert Kiyosaki talks about rich dad, poor dad. When I was growing up, I had my best friend and his dad, and they would sit around the lounge on the carpet, and they would talk about stocks and shares and stuff, and they were like 15 or 16. And I had no idea. We didn't come from that background, but I had a little bit of inkling in the background. And I think I often think of Emma and Ben and stuff like that, just even watching me on stage. And my daughter's name's Emma. Watching me on stage. How it changes their mindset. And we spoke a little bit about the challenges of being a parent, etc. And there's a great example of that. Your dad is a refugee.
My dad's family was. But I'm not sure. Obviously, when sitting in the car, I'm not sure that he necessarily knew what would come of that. But I think the point is, like anything in life, probably like this, and this kind of what you're doing today, which is when something is a little bit of an ivory tower, you don't necessarily go near it, or it feels a bit mystical, or you don't feel terribly confident. So I think, I have an all-round obsession these days with stock markets, and it's like what most people find that just completely baffling, which is completely understandable because it's an unusual thing to be interested in. But equally, it's like isn't that something sort of on an ivory tower? But actually, probably just because I played a game with my father. It doesn't really strike me as being anything.
There's no fear around it.
By the way, I have never sat on a stage where I've thought about my posture in the same way as I am. Do you know, it suddenly occurs to me. I mean, first of all, I'm a bit uncomfortable. But second of all, I'm constantly, I'm sitting up straight. And it's just hilarious. I need to come here every day of the week so that my posture improves and speak to people that are in the chiropractic industry.
We are fine with that, yes?
Yeah.
Yes. Awesome. Then your journey was, tell us about the company that you listed. And what did the company do?
Well, I think, no doubt, lots of people in this room clearly have a skill. Some people may not be chiropractors, but might be running a business. My first job was McDonald's when I was 16 because I was desperate to earn money and buy T-shirts from Topshop, and I didn't have enough pocket money. So I've been working since I was 16. My first business that I started myself was in my sort of mid to late 20s. I went into investment banking when I was straight out of university. It was like literally the family dream. I was the first in my family to go to university, the first in my family to get A-levels. My brother was a bit naughty at school and didn't manage that. There were lots of firsts, and then I went into the City of London and like in an investment bank, and it was like the dream of a family. My family were, well, notwithstanding that they had fled... on both sides of my family, they'd fled war, pogroms, the Holocaust. On top of that, it was the pinnacle of the effort that my parents had made to put all their, their energy into my education. So when I announced that I was leaving at about 26 or 27, I think I felt as sick as my parents did suddenly with panic. But I started a business. My first business was in real estate services. So I was aggregating, at the time, car parking, believe it or not. I remember the first ever thing that was printed about me because my grandma... I kept a press book that said the Queen of Car Parking, and it was like something that she really held on to. Very proud grandparents. My second business was in the same industry, and now I have landed up in software. And I guess, I think business skills, how you hire, how you run a business, how you behave, raising money if you need it, all those sorts of things, it gets easier and better as time goes by. And I often say you don't, unless you need to be a chiropractor or a lawyer or a brain surgeon, you don't necessarily for business need to have acquired skills or huge amounts of history in that industry. So, I hope not, because I never did and I've done all right.
So tell us, what is the seed of opportunity that presented itself to go into aggregating car?
Yeah, I'm trying to keep it lively because there's so many things I've already told people about me that just would be a real conversation killer if we were sitting opposite each other at dinner. You can imagine how dating was for me in my 20s and 30s. It was like, I'm in car parks. To be honest, it was less about the industry. And what I had noticed when I was a banker, and I was always mortally shy. I never talked to anybody unless it was about work. And so this is like, I learned how to do this, but you know, school drama was my worst. I wouldn't say a word to anybody about anything, and I would go red. But the things that I learned when I was starting to meet business people is there were lots of markets, mid-markets, not huge markets, not multi-billion, multi-trillion dollar markets, but businesses that had been built that were making 1 million, 5 million, 10 million, 25 million, that were not really being either aggregated that well, or in many ways, I was listening to you talk about, you know, elements of digital marketing and about grand openings. And by the way, you said grand openings are the best. So this is the grand opening slot of the day, by the way. I'm grand opening your day today. You know, if you are a very small business, you can't necessarily command the absolute best person in the world on digital media or the best person in the world on, you know, contracts, because you've got a certain amount of cash and you have to do sort of economies of scale. So I just spent a lot of time watching and learning from mid-sized businesses that really were great businesses started by very passionate people, but didn't necessarily have, they weren't being run like operational businesses with a P&L, thinking about scale.
Got it.
So it wasn't actually car parking necessarily that I was going to start with, but.
So it was essentially a roll up in that space?
Exactly. Yeah. And I looked at nurseries, children's nurseries, didn't look at chiropractic surgeries, but if they had a real estate element and I spotted them, I might have done. But yeah, it was self-storage, all those kinds of things. They were kind of operational and real estate.
Yeah.
So it was more about spotting an opportunity. And then when we found one and we found two, we then found 10 and we found 20. That's how I got started. I had no particularly fantastic knowledge of car parks. But I mean, now I do. Now, obviously, I've been out of that business a long time, but if you have a ticket or you get stuck in a car park and you're my friend, I mean,
I
can be helpful in that regard too.
It's interesting. So I don't know if you guys know this, the background with the multi-site that we used to own was that our play was to either become the platform that we had, so at that point, £5 million, and we are an incredibly fragmented market. So I always say this, and I really meant this, I wish more people were doing what we're doing, because what could have happened was then, like happened in dentistry with the Smiles deal. Are any familiar with what happened to Smiles Dental? So Smiles Dental, like a group of 10, ended up buying a group of 20 and a group of 20 combined with a group of 40, etc., and they continued to do that, and eventually that became Smiles Dental, and Smiles Dental sold to Bupa for £1 billion.
Yeah, right. Like Portman Dental, all those sorts of things. Yeah, absolutely. Veterinary clinics that now become
and now Medivac. Veterinary clinics are doing it.
Yep.
And the joke when we were doing the rounds in the private equity world is everyone's had some type of hand in the Smiles Dental deal. Everyone's like, oh, I was involved in that deal. But that's what we were trying to do with the market, and that's why I was genuinely going, I wish more people were doing it, so that we become this person would buy this person would buy this person, and then there was more opportunities for either purchases or people to purchase us. Does it make sense? So that was the play we're looking at, was a roll-up over time. Now, there's a chiropractic group in Norway that's done it very successfully. I think they're up to 100 practices now, and they started exactly one group, bought another group in Sweden, etc., and they were called Clinics for Alla. That's Swedish for Clinics for All. At some point, they did that. That was our play. So it's interesting that you came from that space.
Yeah, and I mean, there are all types of people in the world, right? All kinds, shapes and sizes. Some people want one to be an independent operator in their own room that they're borrowing from someone else. Some people want one site, some people want five, some people want to try and aggregate. So I think it's never one size fits all, but that was, you know, and that's another thing that I learned, which is there are lots of people that run really good businesses, but actually they didn't want to. So, you know, we had a cash shell. We're basically a business on the stock exchange that allowed us to buy businesses for cash. And some people weren't interested in that, even if it was really compelling or lucrative.
No.
So, you know, we all have different drivers, different needs, different family responsibilities, different financial goals. But yeah, I mean, mine were big.
I was going to say, what are your drivers?
Well, what are my drivers? My drivers, I honestly still don't know after all these years. I just know that, you know, that it's not that it's never enough. It's just that I really, if I think about my current business, my current goal is for this business, so my current business is actually US domiciled. I want IP on the New York Stock Exchange because that's bigger.
Yeah.
And to do that, by the way, for anyone who doesn't know anything about that, which should rightly be almost anybody, you have to ring a bell. You basically stand on a balcony in the New York Stock Exchange, which, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's like the pinnacle of excitement. But you stand on a balcony, you can ring a bell, everybody claps, the market is open, and you know, you get a cheer and your team are on there. And all my friends say to me, look, we're going to rent you a balcony. We're going to rent you a bell. We're going to get you a bell. We're going to rent a crowd. It's going to be much easier, much less stressful. You could exit successfully. You know, just it's a lot less stress. Why don't we just do that? And I'm like, no. So I don't know what it is. It's a bit obsessive. But I mean, I want to be currently my software business is in a relatively young market. So we're an alumni software. We power alumni networks, our software for very large companies. You leave Citibank or PwC or LinkedIn or Marks and Spencers and they want to stay in touch with you, they use our software. It's a relatively young market. You know, I know that everybody is going to have that. Every company will have one and I want it to be ours. So I guess, you know, when you talk about what drivers are, I really want to build a huge, big company. Equally, I am, you know, I already know in my head the person that I want to write my first, when I exit successfully, as everybody constantly corrects me, which is, we will. The question is like how big and how and when. But, you know, I know the person that I want, the charity that I want to give my first massive anonymous check to. So there's a mixture of business goals and competitiveness. I am, escape anyone, the most competitive person on the planet. You know, this is an element of all of those things, but also I want to be able to do better, give more, and not ask for permission or help. And a great way to do that is, I really believe there's nothing wrong in wanting power. I mean, there is if you're Kim Jong-un. I don't want that kind of power. But, you know, power and influence is a really helpful thing when you're trying to achieve a goal, solve a problem, help a refugee, whatever it might be in the world. Yeah. So I guess, you know, I suppose it's money and power, but that sounds terrible to a lot of people. But I think that's a good thing to want.
Yeah, got it. Do you mind sharing us the charity that you know?
This person, not that anybody's going to know this person. I mean, sure. When the anonymous checks comes, maybe. It's a man called Hillel Neuer. He started something called UN Watch. He has for years been sitting along with a small group of people in the United Nations holding dictators and bad policy to account because it happens every single day. And I've been watching it for years and years. And I always think to myself, you know, it's not very much I can do. I can't bring down the Venezuelan dictator, but I could certainly help him. So, yes, his name is Hillel Neuer. He's on Twitter and Instagram. I hold you telling people to use social media more. So he's very prolific there.
Very cool.
You know, I can't wait to be able to do things like that.
Pretty cool, eh? Yeah, very cool. You said something there. You said your new business or your relatively young startup is in alumni. Okay.
Well, I say it's a young sector. So we've been going for a while. So we're sort of I don't know that we're a startup. We've sort of got lots of very large enterprise clients, but we will always be smaller than our customers because our customers are always
massive.
$50 billion Fortune 100s. Yeah.
And you said something. You said everyone will have one.
Every
company will have one, okay, and we've spoken a lot about, okay, it's no secret that the recruitment market at the moment, I mean, UK, the lowest unemployment rate in the history of mankind currently, our deal flow, when any of us are advertising, like we used to do, passively advertise on Indeed and wait for advert, it's just the
God,
market.
Oh, God, no, don't do that.
Yeah.
So sorry, let me rephrase that. If you do that, I'm sure that's great. There are possibly better ways to do that.
We did two hours on that yesterday going, it just doesn't cut it.
I hope there's no feedback form about me afterwards.
But that's exactly what we spoke about. That just doesn't cut it anymore. So one thing, what is an alumni group? We have a saying, the fortune is in the follow-up, okay? Which is, from a marketing perspective, is following up the leads, etc.
Yes,
and when I heard you explain what alumni was, I was like, this is exactly from a recruitment perspective
like
what it is. So tell us, what is an alumni for a big business?
I've never thought about it like that. I like that. It's like follow-up on crack by large companies. Yes, well, essentially... I don't know if anyone's worked in a large corporate.
Follow up back from crack.
I'm banking that, but I won't describe it as that. So my day job, but I guess it does relate to the conversation that we might have about people and hiring. Businesses, your businesses, very large corporates spend a lot of time, money, and energy finding, recruiting, resourcing, sourcing, upskilling people that might work there for days or weeks or months or years, and then when they leave, it's like thanks, bye. Which I think maybe worked 50 or 25 years ago when certainly for most people I know, our parents had one job for life or two jobs for life. We had a few jobs. For those people that work in large companies, you have a few jobs for life. Our kids will probably have 8 jobs at the same time sort of thing.
Yeah.
So with the tenure being quite low, wherever you are in the world, in a job, these days it's 2.5 years is the average tenure in a job across all industries. Saying thanks, bye doesn't really make sense after that investment. First of all, you might want to hire them back. You might want to sell them something. You might want to ask them for support. You might want them to be an advocate for you. You might want them to like your Instagram post when you're talking about your grand opening that started 7 months ago. There's lots of things that you need from community. Like this is, Ryan, this is a community, right? This is a tribe. I always think of life as a series of tribes. And I have a collection of tribes and I go to different tribes for different help. And you know, alumni, this group is all tribes of people working towards a common goal, who can support each other in some way, shape or form. And it just had not been technologized in the corporate market. So, you know, PwC, Citibank, all these kind of businesses, they have hundreds of thousands of alumni. How do you stay in touch with them at sort of scale without it being on a spreadsheet and you know, Marge in the basement with a lot of records she's got to manually change?
Yeah.
That's our day job. But it does kind of correlate to the kind of relationship point that I heard you making earlier, and staying in touch and leveraging your audience. That's really alumni commercial connectivity. I think there's nothing wrong with that.
Cool. I think the first time I heard you speak and you explained the business, and then you also spoke about how you regularly walk into coffee shops and restaurants and places like, and recruit the waiter waitress.
It's true.
I was like, actually, I don't think there's any surprise that you've ended up in an alumni type business, because I think in some way you've always been passionate, and I could be wrong, but it looks like you've always been passionate about either culture, hiring, creating a good place. And when I went to the back to greet Emma, I came on stage quickly. You guys were doing exercise, and I went to say hello. And even your what you were witnessing in the room, of all the things you said to me, you said, "I'm watching your team," and you said they are so engaged. Like, you clearly have an amazing team. And I was like, wow, you know, I think that you've maybe always had a bit of a spot for that, or a passion for that.
We probably all have like strengths and weaknesses, yeah. Right? I like to take my weaknesses and put them under the carpet and not talk to anybody about them. And we're just going to put those on the left. I think emotional intelligence is incredibly important in business. And you know, there's lots of things people say, and I listen to other people speak, and I'm like, yeah. It just is. But we all run our businesses, we all operate in our day jobs according to our personalities. I laughed when you said that about coffee shops, because sometimes, so we've got our main offices are the UK, the US, and Brazil, and we've got quite a lot of people there, and then we've got Macedonia and Philippines, and we've got different cultures in all the offices. But for some of the teams, HR teams or finance teams, and I come in when I'm in one of the offices, and I'll say, I just got to be in touch with this person I just met. And a couple of weeks ago, I walked into my chief finance officer of the whole company, and I just said, "Oh, I just met this." He said, I mentioned somebody that I thought would be good for a job. And he said, "Don't tell me. You just met someone on a bus and asked for their phone number or something." And I was like, well, not quite, but basically, yes. I mean, so I do, you know, you have to, as I said before, you know, some people have to have skills, yeah, and a sort of predisposition or some kind of knowledge or training for sure.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, sometimes you can spot people that have potential. So, I mean, we have, obviously, when you run a business, you can't have favorites, because that's completely inappropriate. But you can have soft spots for people. And also, this is not like live stream to my office.
No.
Alex.
Cut the stream.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Alex in my office, I have a massive soft spot for. He joined us from, so when I'm in London, there's a Joe and the Juice in my office. It's like quite fancy, quite overpriced. I never really enjoy it, but for whatever reason, I keep going back. I don't know what it is. So every time I go there and I'm ordering some weird juice with something in it I can't recognize, that I probably don't like, but sounds healthy. There's this chap at the young man at the till, and he used to hold court. And often there's a lot of people complaining, and it takes a bit long. It's just, if you're going to pay that kind of money for a smoothie, you can assume the audience are either a bit tricky or in a rush or very demanding, that's what I reckon. All really nice. So I'm often, he used to basically handle everybody so phenomenally and upsell me. And I'm not upsellable too, because I don't want anything else. I don't even like the weird smoothie that I've ordered. It just feels like the only thing I can possibly have for breakfast near my office. And so I used to watch this. And about the 10th time I went in there, I was like, well, you know, always been a, what are you doing? You know, what are you doing with your life? Is this your full-time job? I spend a lot of time asking young people, is this your full-time job? Uber drivers, is this your full-time job? An amazing Uber driver the other day who's been training in cybersecurity. I'm like, ooh, excellent. Here's my card. Alex joined us about 2.5 weeks later from Joe and the Juice, because I could just see that he had exceptional people skills. And he'd done a degree in computer game design. I love computer games, and also that immediately told me that he had an ability with logic and attention to detail, because you can't design a computer game without that, and he'd pass his degree. So he's in one of our business development teams, and he's like phenomenal and like a sponge. So that's just one example. But I have Lena, who recently joined us also in the London office, who was given my name at a roundabout in Belgium when she pulled her car over when driving from the Ukraine to London. So my family Ukrainian. If anyone read about the refugee aid If anyone read during between, I suppose, about March and June, there was a scheme that was set up to help people with skills find jobs. So make sure that people that, if you were a rocket scientist, an osteopath, a chiropractor, an accountant, you know, one of the things for refugee families is very often you're displaced at short notice and you end up stacking shelves, for which there is nothing wrong with that, because I did that in my earlier life. But if you've trained and you know how to do something, let's make sure you're doing a job that, like, first of all, you can contribute to the economy, and second of all, you can earn a living. So I set that up by accident because I was very cross when the government didn't do that. So anyway, side point, but it meant, therefore, that lots of Ukrainian people now know about me, because this scheme was predominant, it's for all refugees, but it was a massive driver for Ukrainians finding jobs and still is, which is wonderful. So Lena was at a roundabout, and someone told her, when she spoke English, she should find Emma Sinclair when she comes to London, which, by the way, I've got a lot to do and is not ideal necessarily to receive lots of messages, but she came to the office. So, I mean, the point being, for today and for what is the lesson here, is that obviously you can't employ everybody you meet that's nice or everybody you want to give a job to and help. But generally speaking, you know, I think ways to recruit people shouldn't just be posting online. It's the wrong thing. I don't think you get the best. It doesn't mean you don't find the best people, but there are lots of amazing people who either don't know what they want to do yet, or who have skills that they don't. No one's pointed out to them, like Alex, Joe and the Juice. I was just like, I can see he already is, but I can see what he's going to become. I can see his magnetism.
By show of hands, how many of you recruited someone in some way, something similar to that, like someone at the restaurant or coffee shop?
I thought you were going to say Indeed and shame the audience. No. So that's for the best.
No, that'll be easy. That'll be easy. So all of us. Yeah, so it's, whenever Emma tells her, another thing you've spoken about is how you often recruit for other people. Mm. You'll meet someone and they'll be like, you know, you'll be awesome for, I know someone that would be benefit so good. Like
all the time.
Anything.
And when I interview people, which must be quite annoying, but sometimes people, you know, first of all, we can't hire everybody. Recently, I was hiring for a new chief of staff, which is an extremely personal role, and it's a sort of typical role for a CEO in a business of size and scale. And I met with the most extraordinary candidates came through the door. I was like, oh my god! First of all of these people are cleverer than me, which is good. You want high people better than you. But there were some people I met who weren't quite right for our business. And I have a lot of friends that run businesses, either founders or people that are sort of working in other companies where they're constantly recruiting. So I'm forever, one of my board members is looking for a chief of staff, and I met someone who definitely is not for me, and I was like, God, you'd be perfect for Mike. So, you know, creating a bit of magic, first of all, is a pleasure, and it's good, but and it's helpful, but also it does also get you credit with other people. And you can't do it being like, right, I'm just racking up 10 credits for having made an introduction. But I do find that people are incredibly nice and helpful if you're nice and helpful to them, and if you're nice and helpful to them first, then that's even better.
I totally get it. It's interesting because when I saw you speak for the first time, we connected on LinkedIn, and the first thing Emma said to me was, just segueing, something popped up when you said that the interviewer said, let's go for coffee or whatever it was. But remember, one of the points yesterday was the taming the inflation beat was value your time. You know, less, you know.
I'm terrible at that. Don't ask me about that.
but I was going to ask you, it's like, so how do you choose? And then one of the questions came up. So I believe we entered this area where you do need to just, like you did with me, you said, hey, Ryan, when I'm next in London, let's meet for lunch. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Emma spoke at an event. Now, she's going to tell you a little bit in a moment about some of the tribes that she belongs in and some of the masterminds that she belongs in. It's just incredible people. And like to be 1 degree away from that. And Emma said, when I'm next in London, please reach out to me. It's this date. Let's go for lunch, right? And then that ended up to this relationship now happening. Yeah. But someone asked me, like, well, how do you know, because we've all got a limited amount of time in the day. Like my argument is that we should be doing more of that. We should reach out more, open yourself, more accessible to people, which you do really, really well. How do you know, like, when to, for boundaries perspective, when to have more rigid boundaries and or open yourself up more?
I mean, I'll give you a couple of answers. I mean, broadly speaking, in all seriousness, I'm not the best at it. And saying no is a really important skill because I get exhausted amongst anything else, right? We all have lives. I've got children. I've got adopted children. You know, I take care of my grandma. There's a whole long list. We've all got stuff. And those should get my energy. But it's a little bit like shiny things. You know, my life has already been infinitely more interesting than I could ever have expected. And it's because I've made, you know, it really is because of the people I've met and the experiences I've had as a result. Now, look, I've grown a business The Queen gave me a badge. Some nice stuff has happened. My bio sounds important, so I get to sit next to the interesting people in the room quite often. I recognise that, but I did all the work to get there. You know, it's a bit. But my first answer is I find that very hard.
To say no.
Yeah, I do. And also, you know, I do. But generally speaking, in terms of ways I'm a bit more organised about it, first of all, I always say that I remember the person, unless it's a horrendous question, I remember the first person that asked me a question in a room. And generally speaking, the first person that asked me a question or a good question is my pay it forward. Because often there's large rooms. Even I'm going to see my team in Brazil next week, along with a couple of my key colleagues, and there'll be lots of stuff to talk about, right? And I won't remember everything, but you have to have that. That is generally the way that I operate. I will say, for example, that I have benefited from things like Twitter, because that's where journalists are, that's where leaders are. Somebody that is currently a total rock star consulting in our business that we could never afford to have in any way, doesn't want a job but is extraordinary, is someone that I met many, many years ago who was at the time an editor for a section of a newspaper, and she had tweeted asking for a particular type of female founder. And it's one thing I have a bucket load full of, it's female founders. So I replied back with like five people I knew who were perfect for that, only just because I knew that. But that was the start of a relationship that's ended up being her being materially relevant to helping move our business forward in an area we can't. So, it's hard. I can't do everything. In fact, I have to do a lot less now, and I have to say no. But
it's interesting because it wasn't. I would probably never have had the. I wouldn't have probably been as cheeky as to ask to go for lunch with you, but it was interesting.
But isn't it? It's like, why is my time more valuable than yours, right? We all have to respect each other, but we're all equals, but in different ways, right? So, for example, if someone can't, I remember someone that recently said no to me, and I got to tell you, I was like, what the fuck? First of all, I was like that because I was like that. Second of all, we're loosely related. I was like, wow, that's punchy. And third of all, it's not like I was like, let's go for 5 hours to do a thing. It was something I was like, but I have to say, it was actually a really good lesson, because I was like, okay, he's being extraordinarily organized, he's building a very large business. I was like, you know what, we should all, he was like, I'm entirely focused on my day job. And actually, I will say, generally speaking, I find that to be a male trait. And actually, I really respect that, because and maybe that's why there's a whole list of reasons why I think men in the past have had bigger businesses than women. There's a long, long list of the reasons. But I was like, battered me off. Got to do that sometimes.
Should I tell Emma about the Karen Brady situation? So we had Karen come speak.
Did you?
Yeah, and she came to speak at an event, and I asked. And
I don't know where this is going, but I'm going to be very excited to hear.
So what happened was
Chatham House rules.
Yeah, Chatham House rules. So Chatham House rules in the city is that what happens here stays.
What happens in the room stays in the room.
And one of the questions was, I believe she was MD of Birmingham City at
Football
20, whatever it was, 26 or something. And my question to her was, at 26 being like, you know, the head of such a, you know, big multinational corporation, really, was there ever any, and my words were, imposter syndrome? Like we all had. I started my business at 26 and
I was bite your head off.
And she said, and she looked at me, she said, you know what, if I was a male, you'd never ask me that question. And it was interesting because what did you guys think?
By the way, I mean, to be honest, if someone asked, so here's the thing. People can answer questions any way they want, right? Ask a question, be prepared for the answer. Yeah. And, you know, and I
am. Let me just say I wasn't prepared for that answer.
No, clearly I said that was like, but that feels a bit, that feels quite tough, because I know just as many, I think everybody actually I know has imposter syndrome, apart from people that I don't really want to get to know, because they're not really my kind of people. The only people I know who are just wildly confident that they are brilliant at everything, I'm like, thank you very much, you're not that great. But that's pretty harsh. That's pretty harsh. There are a lot of things that people ask women that they wouldn't ask men. I'm not sure that that's fair. But you know what? She made a point that made you think, no doubt.
Now listen, what she did do was give my audience great entertainment value.
Well, I'm like, how can I be as memorable as that, but for better reason? Okay, I've got,
you're fine, you're fine, you're good, you're very memorable. Okay. You're very memorable. But I would like to ask another question. I want something that Emma said not to go unnoticed. She said, generally, that person who asked the first question in the audience is my paid forward. My question I'd ask you not to answer but out loud now, but just to think about is, generally, who is your paid forward?
Me to fix my back. I just want to put that out there subtly. The subtly. The microphone.
But I think, I think it's a really interesting point. It's like you're very purposeful about it, Emma, and you say even that statement's quite. That's generally my paid forward. But I wonder if we're not at times all of us a little bit too casual about like because first of all, I imagine you really appreciate the first person to ask the question because it's that as a speaker, it's like oh my god, just gets the ball rolling a little bit. But like I'd ask all of you, like okay, we're all service-based businesses. We're not allowed to have favorite patients, but we all have patients we have a soft spot for. Yes, and who is generally your person that you pay it forward for?
You can pay it forward all day long, but the thing is, I don't think that one can judge or expect that of people, right? People.
No.
My husband says that I do that. By the way, my husband's not a mean, horrible man, just so we're clear. Again, Chatham House rules, but just want to make that clear. But equally, he's wired differently, right? So I've had refugee kids living with me for 10 years because of personal, the whole collection of reasons where it's made sense for me and I wanted to. And it probably wouldn't be something that he would do. Or whenever we're out and about, it gets a bit cross sometimes when I'm like getting busy fixing something or someone's starting a business or a kid is doing something. We all have different personality traits. I do think, though, that everybody can do something every day for somebody else. I think it's quite a good habit. And I think for anybody that's not necessarily, as not really their kind of vibe, then just imagine how much good will come back to you. And if you are running a business, or even if you're not running a business, if you're in charge of marketing, if you are here today and you've got a table full of people and you want, you know, you might, someone around this table might be the absolute key to you achieving something you really need to do, or be able to help you, or be able to help your kid at school. So
we have a saying here that you can learn more from the room than you are from me. You're gonna learn more from the people in the room than you will from like the guy on stage and thing, because you've got how can all of us not be smarter than one of us, for example. You know, my job's not just a facilitator. So I want to segue into tribes a little bit. You have a very impressive group of tribes that you get to hang around with, as you said.
Well, that's what you know about that unusually, because when I was at the event that we first met at, I was asked to talk about like how I get kindly asked to talk quite often. People are very generous. They'll give some, you know, a generous fee to a charity, and depending on who it is or what it's for, I might do it. And that particular talk, you know, talking about how you got somewhere is quite boring for other people, I think. Also, it's just like a list of either achievements that make you sound glossy, hiding those bad things under the carpet, because I have definitely, you know, just to be clear, definitely made lots of mistakes. So I talked about my tribes, and my tribes are a different collection of people. The way I described it that day, which might actually be relevant here, is it's almost like all the different rooms in the table, right? So my tribes are my family, the people I went to school with that are still my old friends. But also I've got a gang of female founders where we've all had the same journey, right? We all started with nothing, and some of us are growing sizable businesses. It might be I've got a community called GBX in San Francisco that's Brits, I spend a lot of my life in California. It's a bunch of British people that are there that's turned into quite a big group. It just so happens that for anyone that's heard of Slack, potentially it's the messaging. Yeah, the co-founder of Slack is like, so I really like computer games, is a gamer from the Midlands. Who doesn't know? That's, you know, there's two people behind Slack, and one of them is much more visible and one of them is much less visible. So that's a really interesting crowd. And I think, and you know, the people that work in my company around the world. So tribes, essentially to me, is just a quick way to describe a group of people that you can go to that can give you a high five on a bad day, pick you up, high five on a good day, pick you up off the floor on a bad day, can give you words of encouragement, have been there before. You know, you've got a question about a legal document, you know, can you just slip me the template of that document, so don't pay a lawyer. You know, when I started my businesses from nothing, and we all help each other. And now some of those groups are on crack, right? They're like, oh, I need to meet Sheryl Sandberg, or Tony Fadell made the iPhone. Can you arrange for him to speak? It's on crack for some people because people's businesses have got interesting places. Their boards are really interesting. You know, we've all known each other for a really long time. But it might also be a challenge with a kid, or a bad hair day, or, you know, the pet's not feeling well. It's everything. So having a group of people around you, and I guess that's what, I mean, when I was sitting at the back and watching, I was like, well, that's what you're doing, right? You're creating a tribe so that everyone here has a person, some people in a similar role, industry, space, challenge, to have that conversation with. And that is, you know, you can't pay money for that, really. That you cannot build a community that is not based on authenticity. So that's what I saw here, and which, you know, which no doubt is brilliant for everybody. So well done you.
Thank you very much. Mm. Thanks, guys. First of all, have you guys had a good time so far?
Yes.
Yeah, good, right? I want to talk about culture, and then I want to go to. I want to open up the floor here, and then thank you so much for being here. We obviously can acknowledge that you're in quite a bit of pain.
I was just thinking to myself. Also, normally people move around when they talk. There's so many things that I've become unusually self-conscious and aware of today. As I was just moving while you were talking, I was like, I'm fidgeting quite a lot, but I'm a bit uncomfortable. Yeah, thank you for noting that. I am. No, I'm in a room full of people who can sympathise.
No, they definitely noticed, I promise. Yeah, okay. So we're definitely going to take care of Emma, yes? Okay, so we'll make sure you take care of. But I want to talk about culture for a little bit because, okay, you said something in your talk that I watched, 6 months ago, and you said, we entered into a period where everyone was talking about the great resignation.
Yeah.
And then you said, well, welcome to the great rehire is coming.
Yes.
Right. But in between that is culture and retention and all of that. What makes a great culture?
Oh, so the reason I sometimes preface an answer with some thoughts is because we can all say, I listen to other people say stuff a lot, and I'm like, whatevs. Mm. I spend a lot of my time in my head saying that, usually not out loud, in a nice way. And people talk a lot about culture. And I will say, when my business was in its earliest days, and when I was least experienced, and I had less money, less resources, and people, there's only so many battles I could fight. So people would be talking about culture, and what's your work culture, and what's your purpose? Have you given everyone like a motto and a purpose on the wall? And I'd be like, you know, I can't even open the post. I'm so behind on everything. Now, that's just not a thing. I'm just trying to build a business. I think culture is just something that is a reflection of the people that you work with. So if you have no bandwidth, what is culture? It's you can be a leader even if you're not a leader in how, in the environment. Like we are at home, right? If you're a shouty kind of person at home, culture's probably... That's not great for anyone that shouts at home. Really sorry about that. I think when you grow a business, though, it's absolutely critical. So like the journey has been really interesting for me because I've been like, right, okay, well, this really matters. And then we really had to think about our internal brand and culture so that people understood not why they were there, but felt a little bit more connected, especially when I stopped being able to interview people, which was a real moment. Because now I interview some people for certain roles because it makes sense. But I definitely don't interview everybody at all. And I would love to, but I can't.
Yeah.
And they can get a sense of the business from me. You can talk to me about my company. You can talk to me about what I stand for. You can ask me questions and have an O's and a Google. And it's demonstrably clear, I think. But you've got to have that kind of float out further and wider. So now, to me, with a scaled business, culture really is making sure that everybody knows that they... And again, I used to hear these things and I used to be like, oh, whatevs. Everyone knows they're valued. Everyone understands, like... a bit more the calling of the business beyond just like a day job. Everyone feels a little bit connected in the right way. Not everybody, you know, not everybody's into touchy-feely or warm or wants to care about that necessarily. And we've got like digital nomads that are like... But I think you have to have something that people can feel beyond a paycheck. And so it's really important. And I'll end with this. It's really important for retention.
Yeah.
Because for me, the worst thing is losing someone I don't want to lose in the business. Because once you've lost someone, even if you fight to keep them, probably they're going to lose 6 months later. They've had the, for whatever reason.
That's an interesting point.
It's to make sure there's a great working culture, but it's also to prevent turnover of people you don't want to lose. It's to secure your reputation when you can't be in the room. It's everything, really. And honestly, I hear myself when I was like, it used to drive me mad when people used to say this when I had a tiny business. I have no idea what everybody here does in size and scale. It used to annoy me so much. I used to be like, oh, how do you have time for that? When you've got a few people, you need to start thinking about that.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I think I always tell a story of my ex-business partner. He had a bit of a philosophy. Don't solve a problem when there isn't a problem. However, which means you would never be forthcoming with, for instance, checking with team members whether or to if with, and you know when you've got like, you know so and so, whoever's not 100% happy, etc.
You can't face it because you're tired, right? Sometimes.
And he'd go like, well, just leave it because like, you know, and I've got the opposite. I've got, like, I've really changed a lot with that, is that, no, it's worth, because what you said there was a very interesting distinction for me, is when the resignation happens and you save the resignation, it may be too late.
Yeah, and it's just, and if you've found good people, you want to keep them. We had someone that resigned recently, so we've got quite a lot of people. So I definitely don't, there's some people that I interact with more and less, but there was someone that resigned who I don't really know very well, and is in a country far away, but I just know is a rock star. Mm. I just know it, because that's what happens when you've hired thousands of people generally. So I don't really need to work with her, and we don't overlap. And what she does is well above my pay grade in terms of the kind of technicality. But I mean, I rang her. I was pretty sure she wouldn't have signed a contract for the other. And I just know that she's someone I want in our business.
Yeah.
So I just rang her. And it was like, I remember it was midnight in London. I was getting on a plane at 5 o'clock in the morning. I was really tired. I moan, but I really was not a great moment. I sat on the phone for 45 minutes with her. It was worth every second.
Yeah.
You know, I'm seeing her in a few weeks' time. She's going to be with us till we exit, because she's amazing. But I had to do that. And you can't rely on that when you have size and scale. And also, you shouldn't have to always. Right? No. I now know where it was that we started. So she stayed. And I'm so happy. But I could see from the conversation where we lost her. And sometimes you can't help it, right? If someone's offering someone twice the money, I mean, I've got to be honest with you, good luck to you. We can't afford
totally.
That. And you know, people are going to leave, right?
Yeah.
People, and good luck to them as well. Mm. But it's losing good people can sometimes be avoided. And it's something that I spend a lot of time now thinking about.
Well, very interesting. Very interesting that probably my mind has changed a lot. And here's the thing is, I think everyone in the room, when you've got a gut feel someone's either unhappy or there's something you're talking about, you generally are right.
Yeah. It's like dating, right? When you're thinking, are they into me, not into me? Yeah, you know if someone's into you. And I'm like, I always use that analogy because it's hopefully something most people can relate to, right? You know how people feel. Sometimes you might not admit it, or sometimes it's too hard to deal with knowing that something's not quite working. But, you know, because we're all tired and we've got things to do. But yeah, I mean, that's why I say emotional intelligence is really important. And if it's not your skill, because some people that is just not their skill. Make sure you're working with people who have the skills that you don't have, right? I have that in spades. There's other things I'm not so, the things that we don't talk about that I'm not so good at, right? So I have people that I know I can rely on their opinion. And this is all not rocket science, right? We all know, surround yourself with people that are better than you or smarter than you or have different skills to you. And that would be one, because some people are terrible recruiters in my experience.
Got it, cool. You guys learning something? Okay, I would like to open the floor to a few questions, right?
So I tell you what, I'm also going to just set the scene on this before we take any questions. So first of all, thank you everybody for wanting to make yourself known. And by the way, I've just seen Seven Hands and clocked them mentally, and I'll be here afterwards for a bit. For my point about paying it forward is I know when I can pay it forward, and I know when I can do something. So I'm normally the first to tell people, so don't panic. I've sought all seven. I'm going to start with the lady over there because I always start with a woman sometimes, which is naughty.
I just quickly want to just... first of all, are you guys enjoying your time with Emma? Yes. And Emma, like I just, you know, just I think it's important that you guys know this. Is like, so I jumped on a call with Emma to prep for this. And within 10 minutes of the call, I could see her fiddling with the computer. And she was like, so you're on Twitter, right? I'm like, no, not really. She's like, you've got to be on Twitter. Because that's where like all the general, like we need to get you speaking to like other groups, etc. She's like, do you want some publicity? I'm like, sure. And she's like, I'm going
to
intro you to so-and-so.
I did speak to the Times about you.
Thank you. Mm. And she's like, within 10 minutes of the call, she had fired off an email to a good friend of hers who specializes in giving small businesses £0 to £5 million publicity in newspapers and things like that, I believe.
She writes the biggest column in the UK about people who have built a business from zero, where they have turnover of £1 to £5 million. Yes, I did. And by the way, just so you know. But the thing is this, right?
Pretty cool, yes.
But here's the thing. She is always looking for people
who
have built businesses that are profitable, that's turn over at least a few million in the United Kingdom that have been started by someone. So first of all, for that person, it's like handy, just put on a list.
Yeah.
Second of all, I mean, and also, it was like a pleasure, right? But when I need something, that's not why I did it, right? But if and when I really need something, I know that I'll be able to call you up and you're probably going to be really helpful. And again, as I say, I did not do that because I'm like, that Ryan, I'm going to call him in 2 years and I'm going to fleece him for a massive favour. But, you know, There'll be a time, right? There'll be something I need.
Yeah, totally.
Like the whole the Ukrainian refugee thing that I pulled together was not because, you know, was a collection of people probably of that ilk, right? They're all C-suite of large enterprises and immediately were able to commit to something massive.
Yeah.
But they're all people I know where I've just kind of had interactions with them, not just for my day job. So I really think that if I was to say like a few things that had helped me in life, it's probably just doing that anyway, making nice connections.
Yeah,
it gives me pleasure.
I
mean, it gives me pleasure. If I didn't like you, I wouldn't have introduced you. It's good for both of you. So,
yeah, that's amazing.
You know.
Well, it's incredible. Okay, so the floor is yours. Go for it.
Bias to women, sorry, sometimes. Only sometimes. But I counted seven, so just in case you think I didn't notice, I noticed the first seven, not the first one.
Thanks for teasing me. So my question is really based on the logistics of, you've already said you're a mum, and then you have additional
Step-mum
children
and adopted
as
children,
well.
Yes.
Yeah. So what I'm really interested in, and something that I, and Ryan will know, like I work a lot with Ryan, and something he knows is this is something I tell myself, which is a barrier to perhaps expansion or sort of growth
Spin
any further.
Out. Yes.
Is that I tell myself, but I'm also a mum, I'm the primary caregiver, I can't take my time away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Which I get the impression you also, it's important to you to be there for your children.
Mm.
Logistically, like practical day to day advice, like how do you practically manage that?
Yeah, terribly. Let me give you a quick answer so we can get through as many questions as possible.
Yeah.
I manage it like every other human being, which is badly. I definitely have more, I have infrastructure, I have help, I have an amazing EA who I often don't need to do like work things, but she's like going to deliver a bag of clothes to somebody that I need to like sort some something out. So, you know, the job description for my new EA was slightly hilarious and not normal. So the point is, you know, you have to rely on other people for help. There are also times you have more time and times you have less time.
Yeah.
Right. I stepkids came to me when they weren't babies, and the adopted kids that I have all came to me as older teenager refugee kids. So the requirements for me as a mum are different. I mean, you know, I'm doing business plans with 17-year-olds and like working out logistics of meeting family members in refugee camps. Hard, but actually I can do that. I can still do my day job.
Yeah.
So the answer is very hard, not perfectly. We all have more time and less time at different times in our life. And I will say, though, something I do think about is how much time I do prioritize work. Mm. You know, I obviously prioritize it. My tolerance for pain, but also my prioritization is obviously I make it a really high priority.
Mm.
I think it's me that loses out. Mm. So I'm like picked up yesterday, my stepdaughter, who's just gone to senior school, had her first sleepover with a new friend from school at our house. And I left the office. In fairness, we did a call from the school car park from 3 till 4 on the iPad in the car. But I left work at 2:30 yesterday, which I never, ever do. But I did that because I can. And I worked after everyone went to bed late last night.
Yeah.
And but you know, I was really excited to go to Pizza Express, if I'm honest. Fits and spurts. We all do whatever we can, right? And if you're really ambitious, then you know your children will watch you be a dynamic woman building something, and they will have learned something in that regard that they wouldn't have learned if you'd done less. Justify whatever you need to justify to yourself to do whatever you need to do to build your business.
Yeah.
But you're asking the wrong person, right? Because I'm all about building empires.
Definitely not asking the wrong person.
No, it is so interesting you said that. And one of the things I did get from Karen Bray's thing, she said, like, look, I've never done a school run in my life.
Yeah,
and I don't feel bad about that. But my kids, I think, say I'm a good parent or whatever. And I've had a little joke about you know the cartoon Bluey. Have you ever seen the cartoon?
I don't think so.
Anyway, the joke in the room yesterday was like, in the cartoon, Bluey's dad is always there. And I'm like, good luck with trying to keep up with that as a standard.
Yes.
You know, for
well,
all the
a
kids
good,
watching.
That's a good standard, right? That's a good standard. Listen, different people. Different things, right? I have quite a lot of senior girlfriends who are CEOs and chairs of massive companies, and they say, I outsource everything I can, but they can afford to. So we all, one size doesn't fit all. We all do whatever we feel like.
Next question.
Gentleman here. By the way, as you can see, I've built a business, super assertive, get busy. I'm like pointing at, this is
you
Ed,
go.
Emma,
you go.
You
we love it. Give Filippo a single clap. Ready? Go for it.
Thank you, Emma.
This is like
I'm
an
take
evangelical
a bit.
Church. I'm like waiting for us all
I
to
do
go,
often get
hallelujah.
Messages. I literally do get messages sometimes going, what do you do for a living?
Okay. Thank you, Emma. So my question is...
What's your name?
Filippo. What are the top three advice you would give to avoid losing people?
Oh. by the way, my advice changes depending on like the moment or the day or what's happened this week or what comes into my mind. But hopefully these three snippets that I'm about to think of as soon as I answer and filibuster. I mean, you know, I think being present and acknowledging people, patience, which I had to learn. Right. Sometimes I get really irritable with people that do things over and over again. That is just like, please, you know, really. But it's my job as a leader to be at the very least patient. If someone's not good at their job and can't do it, then that's a different question.
Yeah.
And I think the third thing is helping people to develop themselves. Right. I mean, we can all do that in different ways. A business of two people is harder to do that in a business of, you know, a few hundred people. But you've got to give people a way to develop themselves if you want them to stick around. If it's a super low paying job where anyone's going to do it and it's a summer intern and you're a tiny business, maybe you've got different incentives. But if it's something that's important, you know, people really want to, when people are valued, they really contribute better. I've got, that's like five or six half nuggets, but I've got
you.
A mic. So basically, yeah, that's the best, it's the best I can do. I know they're right to the back of the room to check people are paying attention, Ryan, right?
I like it.
Yeah. It's just like it's not all niceties here.
I like it.
Yeah.
Who's up?
Oh, the right in the very, literally the furthest corner of the room.
Okay, Alistair. Let's give Alistair two clap. Ready?
What is the difference between two and one?
We'd like to tell you, but then we'd have to kill you.
Okay. It's a special secret handshake. Alistair, it was a two clap, it better be a two clap question.
That's right. I'll tell you now. Go.
Okay.
Do you want to stand up just so I can see your...
Yeah,
so I can see
sure.
I can remember in case I need to pay it forward.
Do you think that democracy is still alive and hope and much hope for it?
That is a very relevant question to the room. There's a slight tangent, but my answer would be, you know, what is democracy? So I think it is alive and well, but possibly not in the places that are supposed to be the purveyors of democracy. And that probably ties into why we're here today, which is sometimes the people who are in charge of stuff are not the best at things, but we can all do our own thing to make sure that our universe, our office, our business, our home, our community.
Yeah.
So yes, absolutely, but just possibly there are some pockets of places where democracy ought to probably be the bog standard approach to things where it doesn't necessarily look like that's happening, but good luck to them. We'll all mind our own business and get on with keeping the world a nice place. Look for the good.
Good, like that.
That's a refugee mentality thing, with look for the good. I saw you put your hand up at the very beginning as well, so I know you're in my seven. Don't worry. Yes.
Oliver gets jazz hands. Go!
Oh, my God.
No.
Her mind is blown.
It doesn't get any weirder than that. That was it.
I don't believe it. Don't
worry.
So this is a slightly unusual question for a chiropractic environment to ask, but what has your previous experience as an investment banker and obviously an industry leader and a CEO, what's your take on the current macroeconomic climate without using the word shit show?
Yeah, no, I won't use that. I already swore. And I realised that when you use a swear word, you actually said something or rather. You didn't say the actual word.
No, you can't
swear. Look, so I think that in my little ecosystem of entrepreneurship, we are hardwired to look for opportunities if we are entrepreneurs. Right, there's opportunity in everything, and sometimes that is when I'm thinking about that. I'm like, is that Kool-Aid speech? I wrote a piece recently about that, and I was like, you know, stuff's going to get really bad, and I'm writing a piece about that. But there is opportunity in everything. I do think that we can all do whatever we can to be mindful about that as well, though. You know, it's really interesting. We're doing Christmas parties and all that sort of stuff, which everybody deserves. And I'm planning a sort of post-marriage wedding party well after we got married. And there's a lot of things I'm thinking about when we're spending a lot of money. Because I'm like, there's a lot of people that can't heat their home. Or so I think clearly there are opportunities. It's obviously, I mean, the media feels like it's whipping the world into a frenzy of negativity. So I tend to always be look for the good. I am a perpetual optimist about almost everything. And I feel like if you're running a business or have people you're responsible for, you just have to stay optimistic but realistic. You know, optimistic but realistic is always kind of my general mantra, right? You can be really hopeful, lots of revenues coming, but if you look like you've only got enough money for 3 months, a venture capitalist would say spend it all and win all the business. It's like my world, which I just don't feel comfortable with. But optimistic but realistic. Thank you for the question.
Very good.
I'm going back left, and then I cannot miss your rainbow jacket. So there is no way that you're not asking a question. Clearly, yes, you do not like to be seen in a room. I know that. I'm going to go for back left.
All right, let's do big clap, please. Everybody, big clap.
Thank you very much. Hi, Emma. Nice to have you. Thank you for coming. Just out of curiosity, we all have days or times when we're dipping really low. What are your...
Mood, energy, everything?
All of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like things going badly and just anything that you personally do to help rouse yourself out of that.
Well, just, you know, for the avoidance of doubt, I have really high highs and really low lows, which I think is quite entrepreneurial. Yeah. And I can go between the both of them within about 5 minutes, which also suggests lunatic. I feel all of those things at different stages and times, right? Low blood sugar, low mood, losing a piece of business, not getting investment. You know, the list is really, really long. I mean, I tend to rely very heavily on my absolute nearest and dearest as a emotional prop. My we have quite a lot of animals in our house. We call them emotional support pets. Buddy, who is my assistant's dog, I've told her she can never leave because Buddy is my emotional support pet. But you know, more seriously, I mean, I rely on the people that I love and I tell them how I'm feeling. Sometimes it gets really bad. You know, I can honestly say that. So I've been running businesses for quite a long time now. I never knew what a panic attack was, and I've had a panic attack twice now. It turns out I thought that I was having a heart attack, and I had no idea what it was. I'm generally very calm under pressure. It takes a lot to make me extremely stressed out after years and years of stress. But you know, those things have happened, and I guess I had no particular way other than for talking to my friends.
Yeah.
I will also say that's not enough sometimes. Mm. And I can spend weeks stressed out or weeks not feeling fabulous, along with when your back doesn't work, everything hurts. So I have no magic answer, but I will say having a tribe, having a gang of people who are going through the same journey, so building a business or in a role or studying or whatever anybody else is doing. So find people around you. That's generally the best thing. You know, and pets and chocolate help.
Awesome. Thank you.
Should we take one more question?
Well, I have to. I've now Seven, told the gentleman sorry, 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 that I have to ask him.
Go, okay, we'll take Ben and then Becky. Go for it. Go for it, Jonathan. The microphone. There we go. Okay, Jonathan definitely gets jazz hands. Go!
First of all, thank you for speaking so candidly today. It's actually really refreshing and fantastic to hear, so it's really appreciated, so thank you. My question, I know that carpet's got quite a lot underneath it from what you've been shoving under it through what you've
I
been
talking
about.
I don't know why you say that.
But... That's the question, I know the hallmark card is that we learn more from our mistakes than we do our successes.
Yes.
So if you were to pull one nugget from under that carpet, which would be the one that you look back and go, okay, that was horrific at the time, but it is what has really helped put me here now?
I'll give you one, and then I'll give you one suggestion. One of them would be the stress of public speaking or presentation. If I think about the distress it used to cause me to communicate with people, or in a room, or ask a question, it was just like horrendous. It was like one of my biggest stresses. Mm. And it's like, you know, putting your hand up in a room, asking a question means that the whole room can now find you when you ask a question because you're the person that you resonate with. That's like how you found your tribe. So I think I spent years being more broadly self-conscious. And actually probably that feeds into my entire life, right? The teenage girl once and I felt fat in a bikini by the pool, all that kind of crap, right? No, I don't believe it in your ass. No way. Don't lie. So I think probably being self-conscious, a more broader point, it's just not worth it. And quite often, I have this chat with people all of the time who are in front of me, or they'll be like, I wish my wife or my husband had heard you say that, or they could be more like, and I'm like, just save yourself a lot of wasted energy and just put your hand up and just get on with it. Also, no one gives a shit if you stumble.
Yeah.
No one notices if you say a word wrong. I mean, literally. Also, most of the room aren't listening anyway, so no one cares. So that would be probably something, because that caused me, self-consciousness caused me so much stress. I will say, though, to the wider point about mistakes, for the purposes of why we're here today and learn something, if you have not watched a documentary called General Magic, I really recommend it. And if you look at the trailer and you're like, or you read about it and you're like, and it's about a technology company that started and a weird techie woman suggested it, trust me, or moan, and I'll give you a tenner back if you don't like it afterwards. It's a story of, it's a story of the company. It's the first concept IPO on Wall Street, and they made effectively the first iPhone in the 80s. Everybody who worked there made everything we now use. Tony Fadell made the iPhone, he made the iPod, he made Nest and sold it to Google. Megan Smith, who was just recently CTO of the White House, she made the touchscreen. The person who made the Apple Watch is there. I mean, literally everybody who made emojis. Susan Kerr, she made the emoji at General Magic, and the programmer, you see her making a lemon that moves. It didn't succeed. Wow. And there were a lot of things, a lot of lessons that all the people that worked there shared. And as is customary in the USA, because everyone has more space, everyone keeps everything. And so everyone's garages is full of footage that people took in the 80s and 90s of this story. So this, the film General Magic, the documentary, was made by a person who used to work there for posterity, for all of the people to remember it. And I saw a clip of this, and I'm like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen in my life. I want to see the whole thing. Everyone's going to want to watch it. It won Tribeca. It was a number one documentary on Apple. It was just spectacular. The reason I say watch it, regardless of like technology or whatever you do, is because it's kind of like a story about like always like saying, well, I'm going to wait till this is done to do this, or I'm going to wait till this, or I'm going to, which by the way, I do all the time. I'm going to wait till this till I do this. I mean, obviously, I'm not immune to making mistakes, but it's such a great story of epic failure. But the wrapper around it is, from epic failure comes epic success. You know, all those people have gone on to do spectacular things. Like every single one of them, if you look at the end, they changed the end before it came out. Because I was like, you see in there, for example, Pierre Modia, who started eBay. He started it. My friend Sarah made the movie, by the way. So he started it. Sarah used to tell me these stories, right, before she made the film. She'd be like, oh, yeah, Pierre, he used to have this box on his desk, and it was like a complete mess, and there were all these checks for 7 cents and 3 cents. And we always used to say, Pierre, tidy up your desk. Or the general counsel of the company was telling the story of how Pierre came in and was like, look, got this idea for an online flea market. I've been building it whilst I'm at work, so you can have 50% of the equity because I've been building it, you know, on my work computer. And this, the general counsel heard this and was like, this sounds like a silly idea. You have it. I mean, that's like eBay. It's all on film. So the thing is, from epic failure, and that company failed, and there was seemingly lots of failure by people, came epic success. So I would encourage everyone to see it. Show your kids. It's just a really good wrapper, and maybe a good moment to leave, which is like, you know, we also feel, not just feel tired, but sometimes we feel like failures. We feel good things, but we feel bad things. I think the most important thing when doing anything is just to keep on going.
Okay, awesome. You guys have a good time? Okay, I think
I want to know, is there jazz hands for me? Is there a dance?
Not yet.
Like,
not
what
yet.
Do it's I coming. Get? We've got it's like Christmas.
We've got a special thing saved for you. Special thing saved for you in one moment. Beck, last question, and then...
another one,
and then
sorry.
And get Emma on the way, but go for it.
What's I thought that I kind of wrapped that up with an ending nicely.
And then I realised, I promised Becky,
and
I'm
like,
so sorry.
Not the pro that I pretend to be.
No, I'm so sorry.
So my turning around, so the thing is, you now all know that I've got a terrible back and everything hurts. I'm actually going to physically turn around, because it kills me to look left. Yeah.
Go for Becky.
First of all, hands down, my favourite person who was spoke on Ryan's stage. Obviously, excluding Ryan.
You have extremely good taste, if I may say, Becky.
Thank you. Yeah, favourite guest.
Lady of good taste. Thank goodness you asked her to ask a question.
I know. You see. Yes. I did tell you so, didn't I? Go.
So, excluding the wonderful bio that Ryan read about you... you know, was there a point, or what was the point where... I can't get my words out.
That's okay. So, was there a point where
when you, like, looked up and were like, oh, fucking hell, like, look at what I've done, look at what I've achieved. Mm-mm. You know, obviously you're like... but, you know, there's always something else to go for, and, like, we all in this room want to grow and we want to build and everything. But have you had a point where you've just stopped and thought, Jesus Christ, like... this
well,
is pretty special.
I've had some moments about special. So to the point about, you know, because when you get introduced or like there's words like successful and stuff, we all have our own feelings about who we are and what we've done. So just to be clear, I don't think I'm an abject failure. Also, I've done some stuff that looks and sounds really good. You know, I'm the youngest to do something I had no idea at the time, and now I dine on it because, you know, it sounds very intelligent. My ambition of where I want to get to and is very tied... You know, for example, if we have a bad sales week in the office and I don't run the sales team directly, like it literally affects my mood and I'm like, we are going to fail, which clearly we're not. We power LinkedIn's alumni network. We're good. But so there's a very big goal I've got. So I'm like, I am on the journey. I also recognize I've done some stuff and I know some stuff. But the best thing I can offer you is this. I can tell you some moments that have been moments where I've just been like, I'm going to pick them because otherwise I don't sound like a complete dick. First of all, the MBE was very special because you know, my grandma, who unfortunately passed away 2 weeks ago, was very, very special to me. And there's a lot of stuff that she just couldn't understand. So, like, for example, I did something with Sadiq Khan, and my grandma, like, knows who the mayor is. It's a very big thing. And we were at an event, and he came over to say hi, and my grandma was like. It was the lighting of, so I'm Jewish, the Hanukkah lights in Trafalgar Square. I don't personally don't believe in religion, but culturally very important to my family. So we went to the, they put in Trafalgar Square once, they put the lights and you go in. So I went to the official lighting. And because my grandma is so small and she passed away being 98 and she was 96 when we went to do this, I'm obviously like, first of all, I'm like, excuse me, please, if I want to get anywhere anyway, as you can imagine. But with my grandma there, I'm like, my grandma has to go at the front. No one can nudge her. So we're at right at the front and Sadiq comes there. My grandma is like, she looks at me and she said, how does he know your name? And I'm like, grandma, you know, I met him quite a few times. My friend works for him. We do some stuff together. And she is just like, she just couldn't get. So first of all, that. The second thing, actually, it's all tied to family now. I think about things that matter. The second thing is when I got my MBE, which, by the way, was hilarious because I got an email that came through from the Cabinet Office saying you have not replied to our letter. So, of course, guilty conscience. So I replied back saying, I'm so sorry, could you resend it? And I'm like, I've obviously done something wrong, right? When you get a letter saying you have not replied and it's something to do with the government. That was hilarious because they didn't get the letter. They thought I didn't want it. When I went and collected it, you can have a parking space at Buckingham Palace. Now, also, just to be clear, I'm like not massively into the monarchy. Good luck to them. It's a great tourism thing. But like, I had a parking space at Buckingham Palace, and I swear on my life, driving through the gates and parking in front of the gate, I was like, and next to Rod Stewart, I was like, my mum's a twin. He's like, so my mum and her twin were like, it's Rod Stewart. So when we parked the car next to Rod Stewart outside Buckingham Palace, that was like, I was like, oh, I'm taking my parents. Yeah. But there we are. And that was a prime example of excellent car parking. If I thought it was good, you're absolutely right. So I suppose that there are moments like that, right? They're very rarely tied to business. They're very rarely tied to an achievement in the business per se. Like I'll go and raise, like we're raising a little bit, like a small bridge round for us right now, which is like probably a couple of $1 million, which is, in my world, is not like a necessarily massive thing, but it's got to be done to be done. I don't finish that and be like, oh, you know, go me, ever. Nothing at work, but I think sharing special moments where I have access or something unusual is amazing because I guess that is, you know, it is going back to my dad and to my parents, what they worked for, right? My dad had a day job, a night job. He studied on the side. He lost his dad very young as well, so I kind of feel a responsibility. So when stuff like that happens, that's awesome. I'll give you one last one. My dad came with me when I collected a prize. Don't normally get prizes. You don't get to prize givings as an adult. And I went because they said you could bring a plus one, and my dad was around. That was the other one. It was like a red mag. I don't read magazines. Red magazine, something, whatever. Respectfully, I don't give a shit. But I was able to talk to about my dad on stage and get a prize. So again, all things where my parents, a member of my family's with me. Those are the best moments. So you know, keep going. Enjoy the good things. Wow. And you know, if you haven't had a parking space at Buckingham Palace, I can't relate. So we're kind of.
Awesome. Well,
I can't.
I get it. First of all, do you have a good time with Emma?
Yes.
Awesome, right?
So I want to know what's coming. I mean, like there has to. So pinky swear. Everyone has to give each other a.
Just right.
Well, I got to tell you, yes. I'm in the market for anyone that's not got an office near Baker Street. Let me tell you, that definitely gets the first pay it forward. Okay. Yeah. I mean, thank you. Clocked. So, thank you.
I've been interviewing a few more people. This platform has given me the opportunity to do that, and I've really been enjoying it. And I've started a little habit. And sometimes I didn't realize I was doing it. I write down like four or five things that I think of the person while I'm talking. And is it okay if I share with you guys what I wrote down? So
what happens if they say no?
No, they never say no. I start the day with my room, my rules.
I'd be too scared to say.
Let me know what you guys think about this. Emma, thank you so much for today. I warned the audience that you're going to have an incredible time with Emma, and I really mean this. The first time I watched you, I feel the same way, and I probably would have written those same words down. And my four words were authentic, funny, kind.
No, that's nice.
And driven.
Oh, thank you.
So those are my, I would say, and thank you for your time today.
If anyone here needs a chat show host, when I exit, I'm thinking that could be like a next thing. What do you reckon?
I would love that. I'd love that. But thank you so much. Honestly, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for the questions.
So everyone, please give Emma a huge round of applause.
No, jazz hands.
Jazz hands.
There we are. Hold on a second.
Oh, yes.
I don't know who's on social media here, but I've got, there's a lot of things I don't have. I have a lot of Twitter followers. That can tag 10 people. So if anyone is using for their clinic, Twitter. Social for Twitter in particular.
You guys can if anyone get has a tag got a from Emma.
Yeah, I'll hang on until I do. Actually, I can tag 20. Hang on a second. Let's do like an Ellen Oscar photo.
Okay, take your photos too. Take photos too.
Yes. Fuck it. I mean, it's about marketing for everyone's business, right?
I like that. Go.
Right. Okay. Oh, I mean, I've got this in my face in it. I don't know what I look like, but I will do this. And on the way out, if you use Twitter proactively, if you have a dormant account you have not used for 20 years and you make me tag you and someone else doesn't get tagged, I will kill you. Yes.